Delighted now to be joined in studio by filmmaker Kevin MacDonald to talk about Whitney. Kevin, real pleasure to be in your company. Absolutely loved and adored the film.
Thanks very much.
I know we're sort of at the halfway mark of 2018 and you were looking at the best and worst films of the year. I have to say, for me, this is my favourite film of the year so far. Absolutely loved
lovely,
and adored.
That's a lovely thing to hear. Thanks very much. Nice to be here, especially after that introduction.
There we go. Listen, I hope it doesn't go south after that. But I just wanted to talk to you just before coming on board the project, because Whitney Houston as a singer, as an artist, she doesn't strike me as someone that you would gravitate towards.
No, she's not. I mean, that's the thing, is that in a way, that's what made it such an interesting journey for me, that I started off a bit of a skeptic about her. You know, not, I suppose when I was growing up in the 80s, I was a teenager in the 80s, which is when she was at her height, she was not the one the cool kids were listening to, put it like that. But actually, I was persuaded that there was a fascinating story here. And I think the people who persuaded me were right. I think it is an amazing story. And it also takes you down all these different fascinating channels. And you learn a lot about, you know, the history of black music in America through the, you know, from the 60s onwards. But it's just also just a personal story about family and how families can mess you up, I suppose.
Very true, because there's some information that comes to the fore in this which hadn't been touched upon in other documentaries about Whitney Houston. That's why I implore people to go check this out. Would I also be right in saying that you played a bit of a detective in terms of digging deep into Whitney's story?
Yeah, I mean, I was lucky enough to have the cooperation of pretty much all her family and friends, her mother, her brothers, her sisters-in-law, all these people, all took part in the film. And in the end, all spoke very, very openly. But it took quite a long time to get there. And the first few times I interviewed them, because I ended up having to interview some of them 3-4 times maybe, which is really unusual when you're making a film. But the number of puff pieces I got from them was amazing. I'd never encountered anything like it. And I think the reason for that is because people felt guilty. They felt guilty for their part in her downfall, that they didn't do more, for instance. So you had to get past that to get to a place where people felt comfortable opening up. And in the end, they really, really did open up.
Well, were there people in her inner circle, like her agent, for example, Nicole David, who had said to you, I think at Sundance, that there was stuff even about Whitney that she was still unsure of, that wasn't clear, hence why she almost wanted you to go in a bit of Poirot mode and try to figure
out. Yeah, that's what
out.
She said. She said to me, this is Whitney's agent. She was a legendary agent in the 80s and 90s. She's the person who discovered Brad Pitt. She's a kind of huge person in Hollywood. And she said to me, Whitney was my favorite client I ever had. I loved her, but I never understood her. And I don't understand to this day why she went down the path she went down. And I really want someone to find out. I'd love you to be that person to find out. And it's that kind of really set me off on thinking, this is a mystery story. This is an enigma. Even the people closest to her don't fully understand her. So can I kind of crack that? And so I kind of try and take the audience on a bit of an investigative journey with me. So you meet people like Bobby Brown, who, you know, just gives you the denial, just doesn't want to say anything. Yes. It's kind of, we're sparring a bit. And then you get other people who open up and are very emotional about it. So I hope that by the end of this detective story, people get to an answer that they feel, okay, now I kind of see the key, I understand her.
Because you mentioned key there, because when you hear about an actor taking on a role and they kind of say, there's normally this one little facet of them that unlocks the character for them. When you're in that editing room and the amount of footage and audio that you would have gone through, talk about painstaking to say the least, and then you're adding other footage as well in to create a sense of the time, what was going on, especially within the black community. But what was it for you? What bit did you suddenly go, actually, I'm now really interested in Whitney Houston?
Funnily enough, the thing that, it sounds kind of banal, but the thing that really got me interested was that when she was a kid, I found out, she was really, really badly bullied because she was considered to be too light-skinned. She went to a school where there were lots of very dark-skinned kids. And her mother dressed her too prettily, and so she was sort of run home every day by the big kids who would threaten to beat her up. So she didn't have any friends. She hung out with her family, and her brothers were really her best friends. But then, later in her life, when she thought she was accepted and she'd become this big star, she went to the Black Music Awards called the Soul Train Awards, and she was booed. And there were people protesting outside the theater where the awards were, with signs saying, "Down with Whitey Houston." And I think that really, really hurt her. So I was so fascinated by that, that the kind of like, to me, she was a black singer, but to the African Americans, she was somehow a sellout. Mm-hmm. And that was so, I think it was really, really, really hurtful to her.
Another thing which people will discover in the documentary, I don't want to give so much away, yeah. but there's one particular aspect which I just was blown away with in terms of how you managed to find out the information, was that she had been abused herself and her brother Gary. Yeah. And I know, Gary, the, you said like you had yeah. to interview these people a few times to yeah. break down that barrier.
Yeah.
How did you discover that? Because if that family is being very hesitant and putting these walls up,
yes.
that couldn't have been difficult to just try and pinpoint them. There's something else that's gone on in this family.
I just had a sense from watching all this footage of Whitney for months and months, sitting in a cutting room watching hours and hours of footage of her, that there was something odd about her. There was something that felt, she felt a bit uncomfortable in her own skin, you know? And it reminded me of people I had met who had suffered childhood sexual abuse. There was something in her closeness, and so I started to ask around about that. And to begin with, the family were like, "No, why are you asking that?" And they got quite annoyed with me. But then finally, the brother said to me, "You know, I was abused, and that's why I'm an addict." He said, "Because I can't get these flashbacks out of my head of those times that I was abused." And then slowly, other people opened up, and finally, this just 2 weeks before I finished editing the film. Her longtime assistant said to me, "Actually, I want to go on the record about this. I want to talk to you about this." And so she said, "Look, I talked to Whitney a lot about this, and I think it was the only person who really, really talked to her about it. And I think it was the key to understanding her. It's why she couldn't quit the drugs. It's why she had this self-hatred about her. It's why maybe in a way she was confused about her gender identity." So it felt like the missing piece in a jigsaw puzzle for me making the film, and I wanted to reproduce that in the movie. That you go on this detective story, and then you find this one piece of information quite towards the end, in the same way as I did making it.
Yeah, and they should say that the person behind that abuse actually turned out to be a female relative,
relative who was a singer in her own right. She's yeah. Because Whitney's cousin was somebody called Dionne Warwick, who's like a legendary singer of the 60s and 70s. And huge hits. And she had a sister called Dee Dee. And Dee Dee was also a singer, but not as successful. In fact, she was quite embittered about the fact that she wasn't successful. And Dee Dee was the one who did the abuse.
The other thing I picked up with watching the documentary, Kevin, is that it seemed like Whitney was caught between two very narcissistic figures in her life. Her father, John, and we, of course, have Bobby Brown.
Yeah.
And for anyone that has any knowledge of narcissism, narcissists are someone who can be incredibly manipulative, and they can be overt and covert. And it just seemed like these men had a constant way of getting around her all the time. Is that a fair assumption of those people, do you think? Or
I think so. I mean, I'm not as condemning of them in a way. I mean, they're both done awful things, and they both definitely contributed to her destruction. I think Whitney, when you see her in the home video footage particularly, you see this really quite sweet, quite naive girl who actually, I think, never fully formed a character, never really fully formed a personality, a strong personality. And so she was easily manipulated by people. And I think the reason she never formed that strong personality is because of the abuse. And I think one of the things that often happens with people who suffer childhood abuse is that they kind of find themselves emotionally stuck at the time, I think, from when this happened. And that certainly was the case with her. I mean, it's one of the really touching things about the film, I think, is that you learn that Whitney was so unmaterialist. She didn't care about possession. She didn't care about money. She was earning hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars, and it was all being stolen by her family and by her accountants. In a funny way, it was being stolen because she didn't care. She didn't really care about it. She just wanted to be happily married. She wanted to have a kid. She wanted the simple things in life, but somehow that she didn't even manage to have. And that's what makes it so tragic, actually.
It is very, very sad. And like yourself, Kevin, I wouldn't have been a massive fan of hers, but when you see her story played out, especially in the manner and way which you've put it together, it is heartbreaking, especially when you can step back and go, oh, why weren't there people around her that could have looked after her? But she did. She had an incredible person in her life, her close friend and a one-time partner, yeah. Robin Crawford.
Yes.
She couldn't have asked for anyone better to kind of look out for her, but unfortunately, she kind of had an old self-destruct button in there as well.
Well, I think it was in those days it was much harder to be kind of sexually fluid, if you put it like that. You know, she had this relationship with Robin Crawford, which lasted for a few years, just around the time she was becoming successful, and then she had relationships with men, culminating in this guy Bobby Brown. But I guess, you know, she had to hide that, the fact that she was bisexual or fluid. You know, today she wouldn't have been tortured by that. Also, partly growing up in the Baptist church in America, where they're very moralistic.
And her family would be quite homophobic as well, Kevin.
Yes, oh yes, you do. Oh yeah, you definitely get the sense of that. You know, and I think that comes from the religion. I think that's part of the kind of African-American cultural sort of landscape, that there is a lot of homophobia because they believe that's what's in the Bible, you know.
Kevin, time is up against us, so, and I know you're very busy with a lot of projects, you know, that are nicely simmering away or on the cusp of shooting as well. But if I was to offer you any music artists out there that you could work on next, is there anyone that you go, I'd love to be able to tell their story?
You know what? Maybe this is a bit of a cheat answer, but I am hoping to do a film in the next year or two, which is about a reggae artist called Peter Tosh, and that's actually a fiction film about him and about the making of his famous album Legalize It. And Peter Tosh, most people probably don't know who he is, but he was the other part of the Wailers with Bob Marley. Everyone knows who Marley is, but after the first couple of Marley albums, he and his partner Peter Tosh split up. And Tosh could not get arrested. Nobody would give him the money to make a record at all, because he was quite a difficult, honorary, kind of, you know, a political, radical kind of guy. And then the real story that I want to make the film about is about how this young kid who came from New York, Jewish kid called Lee Jaffe, came down and said, I'm going to help you make your record. I'm going to finance it. And Peter said, how? He said, we're going to deal drugs. I've got contacts in Miami. So this album, which is called Legalize It, it's about legalizing marijuana, obviously, was actually financed all by these flying plane loads of bales of marijuana into Miami. So it's a great kind of heist movie with music. The great, you know, the reggae music of Jamaica in the 70s is, you know, without compare, it's my favorite music in the world. So that's what I want to do.
Oh, Kevin, I can't wait to see that. Kevin MacDonald, thank you so much. Whitney, it's out in cinemas. Do check it out. It truly is unmissable. Kevin, thanks so much for your time.
That's brilliant. Thanks a lot.